Some of you know her. My former deputy retired. It was a really hard time to move across the country and start a new job at the beginning of COVID. But one of the things that he and I both found working together was that we were often going back to work that Alicia DeMarco had done in this office. So I want you to know that we did an extensive search. We did a number of interviews, and she was far and away the best candidate. I really look forward to working with her, and we want to make ourselves available as a resource to the legislature going forward. So that's really just what I wanted to share today.
Are you all right?
Oh, welcome back, Alicia. It's a pleasure to see you.
Welcome. And if you'd like to say something, feel free. If not, you don't have to, but.
Pleasure to be back. I look forward to working with everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right. So we're here to discuss resolution number 7, requesting the New York State Legislature to introduce and the governor to sign an amendment to Article 31 of New York State tax law to permit the County of Ulster to adopt a local law to impose, collect, and retain a tax on real estate transfers. Chairman Donaldson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gavaris, for recognizing me. I realize that, you know, at this point, you know, it's very difficult to attempt to put in new taxes, you know, particularly when we're looking at the COVID situation. And my understanding is our budget seems to be pretty solid for this year. I would like to look at a number of things that I would like to change in this. In that I started out with a number that was at approximately 0.1%, which is basically 50 cents on $500, which same thing is equivalent as 0.1% on the sale coming from the seller. That would be the lowest of any in the entire, you know, state that does have transfer taxes. They all have, you know, higher than that, and some of them have that along with mortgage taxes to go along with it. We have not captured any of that. We are the bag man for mortgage taxes for the city and the towns, as they all have mortgage taxes, and the state for that matter. We become the bag man. We are paid a, you know, small administration fee for doing such.
Chris,
I mean, what's that?
Excuse me, Dave. I'm working and I'm listening at the same time.
No problem, John.
I'm sorry.
All right. You got yourself on mute?
Well, I guess I could. Tell me how. Let who's ever running the show mute me, because.
All right. I'm not running it. So. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, John. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to mute you. Sort of like telling somebody to shut up, you know? But anyway, so what I'm looking at is that due to the fact that that is such a small number, in order to have exceptions to that rule, it would not really bring in March. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think the numbers would have been like 1.1 or 1.3 million if we collected all of it as, you know, using the old numbers, I think. Is that correct, March? And Nina, anytime you want to jump in to correct me and tell me to shut up, please do. I want to be ears on this. So I'm looking at the idea of changing that instead to be $1.50 on 5,000, and then make, you know, some serious exceptions. You know, the exceptions would be something, and you know, I want other people's input. I really don't want to waste everybody's time here this evening. So, you know, at some point, you know, this meeting doesn't have to be extremely long. I think just a brief discussion, and then maybe we'll really look at this from each one of us, look at it and come from a, whatever angle they came from. But if we did it at the buck and a half, then the exceptions would be anybody from 15 years on would pay. From 20 years on would pay nothing, is one mindset, or it could even be 15 years on would pay nothing. And then 10 to 5 would pay half, and then the rest of them would pay, whatever that number would be. Now, it would be hard to track the numbers, and I don't know if you could track the numbers, and that's why Nina was invited, because she knows more about this than any of us, that's for sure. So Nina, what do you have any input on that, tracking the numbers in that manner?
So Dave, thanks very much for inviting me to the meeting. I really appreciate it. I have to say, March has done a wonderful job, and I was looking at the calculator today, March, and maybe you can chime in here as far as how that would affect the transfer tax revenue. But Dave, could you clarify something for me? I'm not following what you mean by the 15 to 20 years. I missed something along the way there. I apologize.
What I'm talking about is the idea that, in other words, if you own the house, you know, anywhere, if you own a house for more than 20 years, you would pay none of that.
Okay.
But it's 15 to 20, you may pay half. I mean, that's I'm using arbitrary. I think, you know, that there's a lot better minds than mine that could come up with probably something better, a better formula. And then, you know, anything under 10 years, you would pay that $1.50 per 500, like they do in many other counties. I don't know if they have the other exemptions. So that's why I was asking you. I mean, you're the one that records all these things. So do you have a method of knowing if somebody had it for 20 years or had it for 10 years or 5 years or what have you?
Yeah, so that's a little difficult to pull from our records. I'm thinking maybe off of the real property system through a section, block, and lot. Maybe we could do it, but off of our system, everything's indexed by property owner, and it would be virtually impossible to track how often a piece of property turned over. But we may be able to do it through the real property card and through real property SDG. I'm thinking that's my thought on it. I know we cannot get that from our office. Now, March, I know you worked up some figures I thought were great. I'm not sure with the calculator with the $1.50 based on the amount of years somebody owns a house, if that's part of your formula.
No, so the calculator does not look and is not built to look at holding period, which I think is what David is talking about. Is there a certain holding period of time at which the transfer tax rate would reduce, or maybe even there wouldn't be a county transfer tax? The revenue estimates that we put together originally showed that if we came in at the lowest tax that any county is charging, the potential revenue could have been $1.2 million last year. We did look at what if we exempted, you know, sales under $200,000. It would have been just a minor hit to that revenue number. And I think to calculate what we're talking about now, which is the holding period, we would have to get the holding period data. I agree with Nina. Real property has that. It would be, you know, writing some macros to match section, block, and lot to their data and pulling out the last transaction. So it's not impossible. It's just going to take us some time to put that together. And then you would have a clearer picture of how, first of all, we don't even know the average time these properties are being held, right? Is the average 20 years? Is the median 15 years? And I understand the desire to look to property flippers, right, to impose the transfer tax rather than mom and pop who maybe have their retirement tied up in their single family home all these years. So we'd be happy to work on that with you guys. We would have to do some coding to get the data from real property, but it is totally doable. And the calculator that we provided really does not look to that right now.
You know, the other concern too.
Nina, let me just, Legislator Archer's had her hand up. Let me just go to her for a second and
see. Sure.
All right.
And then
thank you.
Walter's next.
Thanks. First of all, yes, you can get it from the county tax record. So it does show you who purchased the property last. But it would be helpful to understand, Dave, what your rationale is for the different times of ownership. Is it just because you want to protect those that have been in their home longer?
Yeah.
Just trying to understand your rationale for doing it that way.
Chair Guevara, sorry if I...
Yeah, go ahead and reply.
Yes, it's basically, I know many people that I've talked to was concerned about the idea, just what March brought up. You know, we don't want to, in other words, many people, they have a home and they've had it all their lives. They raised children in it. And I really don't want to see them, in other words, it's their retirement money. you know, they sell the house, they downsize, they go get something else. And so many people have had concern with that. And so that was one of the reasons why I thought that running the numbers on, like, for instance, over 20 years, not having to pay that would make sense, because you're helping them protect that, that retirement that they're, you know, built throughout their lives.
And regardless of the value of the home?
Yeah, I mean, that's another issue. I mean, that's why I like I said, there's a lot smarter minds than mine there. And I would like to get that kind of input, because that's another issue, is dealing with the value of the home. If they're turning in $1 million home, I'm sure they're able to afford to pay this small transfer tax.
All right, Legislator Walter.
Thanks. I've heard now and also in the past this idea of how long they've had the home, the cost, the value of the home, also the age of the person. There's been other things. So I guess I wonder, because that also seems to get more and more complicated on how we're going to know who, we may have years, but whether we have the age, that I want understand the feasibility, if we had something like that would be processed, I guess, through realtors or whoever, is sort of an exemption application. So it just sort of goes to everyone, but if they could check yes to certain things, then they would get exempt. But if they can't, they wouldn't. Because I don't think we'll ever be able to really know how old they are. There are several elements of this, or their income level or various things that, again, cart before the horse, we haven't decided what those factors are yet, but I'm guessing it'll start getting a little more complicated, that maybe, again, some kind of way that they exempt themselves or request an exemption might be an easier path.
Okay, first, then Legislator Haynes, and then Legislator Archer.
Eve, you're correct. I think what we have to think about a little bit here too is the logistics of implementing this. So right now, Newport's just implemented a community preservation fund, and they implemented a tax on all homes that are transferred or conveyed in Newport's that are over $250,000. So that makes it easy for our office to process the application. A set number. They have the transfer tax affidavit that they fill out in their real property, the RP5217, which has the sale price on it. So we're able to compute that tax. We're able to put it into our software and so forth. I think when we start talking about who is going to stay if the house has been transferred for the first time in 20 years, for the first time in 25 years, how are we going to determine that? Is there going to be a form that people are going to fill out? Are they going to fill it out under penalties of perjury, et cetera, et cetera? Another thought I have, and I don't know if, is what about transferring that tax onto the buyer? So the buyer, at this point, it would be the buyer. You could exempt your first-time home buyers who were maybe buying a home for $250,000 or less or so forth. And this way, it's not penalizing somebody who's a senior citizen or someone who's been in their home for 40 years. And it becomes more of the cost of purchasing the home and part of their closing costs. Just a thought there. And I don't know if that's been discussed prior to this.
Legislator Haynes.
I'll defer to Legislator Wrong. Thank you.
They're ready to stop with that.
Legislator Wrong.
Thanks. Just to Nina's point just now, I think one of the reasons to not transfer it to the buyer is because the buyer is like more than likely already paying a mortgage tax. And the seller is already paying a transfer tax. I just keep going back to, I don't know why we're so intent on adding taxes to the purchases of real property. We already have, when you buy a house, you've got all your closing costs, which includes a mortgage tax. I understand the county doesn't get the predominance of that. But, so then we charge them, yearly property taxes, real property taxes on their home for all of the years that they own it. and now we're, you know, proposing to, you know, charge an out-the-door tax on them. I understand it's an easy group of people to go after for, you know, a revenue generator because they're likely to not live or pay taxes here anymore or vote here anymore. But I just don't see this as, you know, a positive ideal for Ulster County. I think that, again, you know, even if we just made it on folks who are flipping houses, you know, the folks who are coming in and improving these houses, they're, you know, picking up a house that's in disrepair. They're picking up a house that's in foreclosure or a short sale. And then they're, you know, taking a risk and putting a bunch of money into it, improving the property, and then selling it. And then we're going to then penalize them for doing so with a transfer tax. I understand everyone says, well, it's not that much money. Well, maybe someone with a millionaire can afford it. Taxes, you know, me personally as, you know, a conservative, I don't believe that you apportion taxes based on, well, they can afford it, so we can add another tax to them. I don't agree with the reasoning behind it in general.
Legislator Archer, did you still want to speak? No. Legislator Haynes?
You know, and then there's capital gains also, you know, that some people come in and pay, you know, they, you know, unless you live in that house for 2 years, and you sell it, you have to pay a capital gains tax on the income that comes in. So that's another tax that people come in and, you know, they make improvements or they build, you know, from, you know, a spec home or whatever, they're facing capital gains tax that already exists as well.
Chairman Donaldson.
Well, I certainly understand some of the comments in reference to taxes and such. But when we do bring revenue in this manner, that means we have to raise less revenue in property taxes. You know, that's the point behind it. And I understand what capital gains are going to pay on that, but they wouldn't, this would actually reduce their capital gains because this would be that part of that write-off. They're not going to pay the capital gains on what they paid on this. So I do understand all that. You know, my mindset was when I first proposed this was the idea of earmarking the money towards housing and housing issues. And that is not going to go away. And rather than, you know, try to do that on the backs of taxpayers in the, you know, on their property taxes, I thought the idea this way would have been is less onerous. And because, and we can look at this and some, I mean, let's face reality right now where we actually awarded money to Community Action to help people to pay their rents, you know, and they have to, you know, go through certain forms to get that. And then we have our own through social services. You know, this money could be earmarked in that manner and also earmarked in the matter of, you know, helping maybe in planning to help municipalities in, you know, pushing to put more housing up. I mean, that's my mindset for doing this from the very beginning. And I realize that this is a, you know, it's really an uphill battle when you propose something of this nature. And one of the reasons why, that's one of the reasons why I brought up the idea of, you know, reducing it or eliminating it for mom and pop. But, you know, we have to also consider the idea that what Nina pointed out was it may be a lot easier if it's a number of, you know, the cost of the house. And from that angle, because then it's, in other words, you're saying anything under $250,000, they're not paying, and they pay it, and anything over $250,000, they're paying, and they get the $250,000, I guess, exempt. Anything over, they would be paying the transfer tax. We'd have to look at those numbers and see how that falls out and whether or not, you know, we have the gumption more or less to say we want to do this. I mean, I understand people don't want to. I understand that. But having said that, most counties either have a mortgage tax or a transfer tax. We don't, which means we raise that money on property taxes, which means we raise that money on sales taxes. That's our two major pieces of revenue, along with motel tax, which is another issue that we have to kind of discuss at some point. because we are the only ones with 2%. So by doing that, as a result, what we're doing is if we're not gathering that money instead from, you know, people renting short-term housing such as hotels and Airbnb, instead we're getting it out of the taxpayer, the property owner. So by giving other methods of getting that money, we can get less from property taxes.
March.
Thanks. I just wanted to note that, you know, the transfers that occurred in 2020 had really wide variability. And, you know, out of the nearly 6,000 transactions, you only had about 90 transactions that were over $1 million, some as large as $46 and $37 million. And when you look to make exemptions at the smaller transaction level, you don't really impact the revenues that much because so much is on these larger transactions. So I just wanted to note that, you know, the size of these, you know, we can sort them and take a look at exactly what they are, but it's not that many over $1 million.
Legislative Parity, you're on mute.
Unmute yourself.
You may need help with that, Natalie.
Somebody else. There you go. All right.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. You know, anything that can start to focus, if the revenues from this were dedicated to housing, I could be very interested in it. You have to have lived in a mushroom cave not to know for the last 15 years that Ulster County is in the throes of a serious housing shortage for almost all levels of people. The commission or the committee on housing just regurgitated about 15 or 20 years worth of studies to confirm that. So if it was dedicated to something to show that, yes, we, the County of Ulster, are dedicated to solving this housing dilemma, and it showed a good faith deposit by us to move forward, I think it's an interesting idea. I would just like to ask one question, though, Chairman Dave. Dave, I think we chatted once about this. And I hear assessed valuations and value of the property. You know, if I might just say that over the years, I'm very, very lucky. My children live around here and their children live around here. We have transferred properties over the years and our property is zoned family. Now, if I kick off, what happens to my property or my house? Does it go into the estate? Is it exempt from it? Is there a tax on it? There may not be a whole lot of families who have been concerned about what we, the Parodies in particular, have been. But so I'm coming at it. Yes, I have a few questions, but it could be awfully important if we were bold enough not to throw the revenue in, if in fact this should happen, into the general fund, but to say this is seed money for some serious housing conversations. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. If you're transferring to a family member, I know that you have done that. You own property and you've transferred property to your children. But I think that's if you're not selling it in that manner, there wouldn't be any charges, I don't believe, because you're not doing that type of a transaction. So I don't know if that would be a problem. But I still think that, you know, all the different items here that are being brought up is makes sense to try to look at that and see how this whole thing is going to look at the end. On how we can make this look at the end. And in order to do that, you know, we have to have this type of a conversation, because it really makes sense. And, you know, Nina knows what she can do, what she can't do, and what her information is, just as March knows what she can do and can't, and what she can't do, or what takes a like, great deal of time and may not be, you know, worth the purpose of spinning your wheels. But it would be interesting to find out these various, you know, items here, like on houses over 250, or on if you do exactly do an exemption of, you know, somebody that owns the house over 20 years. But having said that, like Legislator Archer brought up, I mean, you know, hey, they owned it over 20 years and are selling it for, $15 million. I think they can probably afford to pay the tax on it.
Leader Rock.
Thanks. One more thing I'd like to bring up about a straight dollar amount exemption is that, you know, a lot of the, you know, senior citizens or folks who have owned their houses in Ulster County for a long time, I mean, they've put roots down here. I'll use my parents as an example. My parents bought their house, seven houses away from where I live in the hamlet of Walkill, you know, 34 years ago. For in the area of $80,000 or $90,000, you know, that house is now probably worth $250,000. But in that 34 years, they've contributed to the economy. They've, you know, faithfully paid their taxes. They've opened businesses and provided services. You know, currently my mom is a special ed aide at Ostrander Elementary School. I mean, they're providing a lot of benefit to the community and paying their taxes every year. And because they have been faithful members of the community, put down roots here and desired to stay here, you know, for that time, they've had an increase in equity in their home. And, you know, so if you, let's say we set it at $200,000, you know, if we're going to set it high, you know, you're going to, you know, severely impact the amount of money that you're intending to bring in. I feel like, you know, making this whole process, you know, futile. You know, but if you set it at $200,000, then, you know, $50,000 of their sale of their house currently, it might be, you know, $100,000 when they decide to sell their house, are going to be subject to this tax. You know, again, I understand the desire to search for revenue enhancers. I don't know that there's a manner, you know, that we could set this up with an exemption, you know, that my caucus could support. And we talked about it in caucus last month. You know, I brought up several ideas, including, you know, hold period or, you know, a dollar amount exemption. And there was a lot of pushback on any incarnation of this tax.
I'm going to go to Clerk Poshback first and then Chairman Donald.
Bert Golnick sent me some figures. I don't know if he shared it with the rest of you, but just to give you a picture, if we used a dollar figure, this was based on 2020. So, and he based the tax on $1 per thousand, so 50 cents per 500. So if we had no exemptions at all, it would be 1.2 million. If we tax properties over $300,000, then we would, based on last year's figures, the revenue would be generated at $830,000 because there was a total of 1,300 transfers over that amount. And then if we went over 500,000, we would have revenue of 497,000. And then if we just tax properties over $1 million, it would be 223,000. That's just to give you a feel that you really can impact, you know, the sale, utilizing the sale price, the revenue, but also understanding that you may not be hurting individuals, first-time home buyers, and so forth. So that's just to give you a picture of how that impact would be based on certain dollar amount sale prices. And that would be an easy way to implement this if we do go ahead and put a transfer tax in place. Thank you.
Chair Donaldson.
Yeah, it seems like by talking about the data, that seems to be the easiest method to go about doing it. And I understand where Legislator Rock is pointing out. I mean, I bought my house 35 years ago, you know, myself. And I think I paid $12,000 for it. So I'm sure it will sell for, you know, into the 200s very easily. And I'm, like I said, I mean, I would be subject to that tax and just like anybody else would, unless we did the lower numbers, of course. So I think that lower numbers does make sense in that it seems to be easy to do. Now, what that would be if somebody sold a house for Nina, was the numbers the way they did that, if they sold it for 500,000, then they would only be subject to 250,000 of it, or would they still be subject to the entire thing?
The way I understand it, it's all according to how you want to, you know, implement it. But my understanding is normally the first 250,000 would be exempt, so they would only pay the transfer tax on the additional $250,000. And that's the way we do it for the town of New Paltz with the new transfer tax that they implemented.
Okay. Thank you. That's a wealth of information.
Legislator Walter.
Thanks. I'm sorry. Nina, just to clarify what you said, when you just provided Bert's estimates, that included that assumption?
So Bert's estimates included assumptions that if we had no exemptions, then he did property transfers over 300,000, 500,000, and a million. That's how he based those estimates on. But so if we want to do over 300,000, let's just use that as a figure. He's projecting we would, based on 2020 figures, make $830,000 in revenue. And we had a total in the county clerk's office of sales of 1,378 conveyances over 300,000 last year.
So sorry, just to reference what you were just saying to Chair Donaldson, is that saying then if something was like 600,000, that calculation waives the first 300,000 and calculate? I just want to make sure Bert included that part of it. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Anybody else? All right, so it sounds like there is a lot. Legislator.
I do just want to ask one thing. The component for using this as a mechanism to help provide for housing, how exactly would we be doing that? We would be supporting programs. I'm not really sure. Maybe Chairman Donaldson.
Well,
sure, I can answer that.
Chairman Donaldson, let me just sure. It will address, I think, what Legislator Haynes just kind of
go ahead
was asking. So it sounds like we've got a lot of different directions that this could go. And the real question is, what are people willing to accept and vote yes on? So I would suggest that we put down all of these different options into a single page and then figure out what we're willing to accept. There's no reason to spend the staff's time and effort to figure out what this will come out to if we're not willing to support it anyway. So, I mean, I guess I'll let Chair Donaldson go and then Legislator Roman.
Thanks. I mean, you know, there's been some discussion here tonight about the housing problem. I know that the county executive put out a press release today discussing our housing issues that we have. Everyone knows we have a dearth of housing in Ulster County. We've got a dearth of housing, you know, in the Hudson Valley in general. Right now it's being swallowed up, you know, in large part by folks moving up from New York City and Westchester, the lower areas of the state. You know, I just, and again, this is an editorial comment, and I'm sure it's going to make some people angry, but, you know, when I see an article in the paper where we've got members of this legislature, you know, levying a tax against the IDA for, you know, tax, you know, for a pilot that was given, you know, that was to support housing. And then we come here and say, we want to create a tax on people who already live here to create more housing. I feel like there's a disconnect there. And I feel like, I you know, like Legislator Haynes says, I don't know how this tax is going to benefit housing. You know, what we need, if we want to create real affordable housing here in Ulster County, not affordable housing like people normally say it, but actual affordable housing, is to create more market rate housing. Because the problem that we have here is that we have subsidized housing, but we don't have enough market rate housing. We don't have enough workforce housing, people who, you know, work for a living to find a place to be able to live, either an apartment or a home to buy. You know, and home prices right now are artificially high. And there's nothing that this legislature can do about that, you know, except for, you know, at the local level in our planning and zoning boards to create a better, you know, a better playing field for people to be able to build housing. You know, there's a lot of folks don't want to build new housing and that causes problems, but we don't have any, you know, control over local planning or zoning. You know, as, you know, Chairman Donaldson talked about, we have programs to help people who already live here pay for their housing, but we don't seem to be, you know, thinking about, like Legislator Haynes said, what would this be used for to help the housing problem? That's a real disconnect that I have as well. You know, I understand what you're talking about, you know, Chairman Gavaris, and I think that, you know, putting all the things that we would accept down on paper, you know, could be a good exercise, but that still doesn't answer Heidi's question of, you know, how this money, however much it would be, is going to support housing.
Well, it would be put into that same document as to what's the proposal. Is it for programs? Is it for subsidies? Is it for doing, you know, housing itself? And I agree with Leader Ronk there. This is really a local issue that's been created. And perhaps it's the, you know, becoming on us to actually send a letter to the different towns. Their zoning is restrictive. I know several projects in my area that have tried to do housing, but can't because of the local zoning code. It doesn't allow for it. And it's even more restrictive. They just made it about 2 years ago. They changed lot sizes. So it's not something we have control over, but we're paying for it. And that's, you know, that's the crux of the issue here. Legislative parity.
All right, if I might, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, the housing that's available, and Legislator Ronk talked about affordable housing and all the different levels. You know, right here where I am now, and in many of the communities, there are folks that may be my age that have a house paid for. They can no longer afford the house mentally, physically, emotionally, financially. So it's time to sell. And they sell it. And they have $300,000 in their pocket or $500,000 in their pocket. Where do they go live? I hear it here. Well, you can go to Kingston. I don't want to go to Kingston. I'd like to be able to live in Phoenicia, Shokan, West Shokan. Well, tough break. There is no place to live. And, you know, the question, how can the money help? You know, a couple of years ago, I brought this up it has nothing to do with me, but well, in a way it does. Chairman Gerentine, when he was chairman, said, hey, you know, John, why don't you come on down to our neck of the woods? I'd like to show you some things. And I figured he was bringing me to the woodshed, you know, to tell me, hey, wise up, it doesn't work. And he took me to some of the places down in the southern part of the county. Incredibly good. He said, you have a decent idea. You have to have the infrastructure. You can't just build this in Shokan without an infrastructure. You can't build it in some of the communities, and maybe some of the communities, Mr. Chairman, prevent infrastructure, sewage treatment plants, and investing in those things to keep out these very folks that need housing, whether they be rich. Now, if you've got $500,000 in your pocket, you're not looking to necessarily live in an exclusive gated community. You just want to have a nice place to be able to put your feet up and watch television and hold hands. So I think there's plenty of ways that if it can be done, I mean, it's too bad. It has to be done maybe through a tax where the county wouldn't just fund $1 million a year to implement shovel-ready type projects in communities. And, you know, We got a lot of very qualified people in this county. Counties can do things that people can't do. And zoning laws can keep out the riffraff, if you want to talk about it, or can keep out congestion. But they shouldn't be allowed to be prejudicially zoned. So I would argue that at every level, regardless of your income, there's a devil of a need. And if I may just, who's doing it right? You know, Chairman Gravar's down in your neck of the woods, folks do a good job. The city of Kingston is always involved in housing. Saugerties, I think, does a pretty good job. Esopus and some other communities, a lot of places don't participate. And I, for one, would never be afraid to push them to participate, however it may be. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Chair Donaldson?
Yes. Well, John, if you decide to sell, and if you want to move to Kingston, I don't care what other people say, I'll accept you. I won't hold your hand, though. Anyway, yes, I think Senator Gavaris and Parity, you know, kind of hit the nail on the head in many ways. In other words, the method in which the money gets allocated towards housing would be another discussion, obviously. I mean, there are ways of doing it, such as, you know, shovel-ready sites for housing. And in other words, we can do a... there's things that you can do that we already have a lot of the information already, but some of it just has to be tallied and put together on where the housing could easily go up in different towns. I mean, there are towns like, I mean, there's places like Gardner that almost make it impossible for them to put up housing that is anything more than, you know, maybe a two family, and even a two family is difficult to put up. But there's other things that people can do, excessive housing for, in other words, senior, in other words, a lot of times people like, hey, I'm 70 years old, maybe I want to sell my house and my my daughter put on a little extension, but I'm sure she doesn't want me there, but maybe I can convince her and you know, allow that to happen. And communities do that. I know for a long time, they did not allow housing up above the stores in the city of Kingston. When I was a kid, they didn't allow housing. Some of the people that owned the stores kind of snuck it in, but then they passed things to allow that. So now there are. There's some beautiful apartments up above these stores, you know, in uptown Kingston that, you know, you wouldn't even realize how, you know, how nice they were. And people are paying some significant money for that. So in order to do the housing, there are ways of going about doing that, and that would be another discussion. But the discussion right now that I'm really concerned with, or what I would like to get, something a little more solid, is the idea of, you know, what this transfer tax is going to look like. I mean, we could always, as many places have done, they just issued a transfer tax, and then later on they... you know, you still, once the state allows you to do it, you still have to pass it again. So then you have to pass it for, you know, what we're doing is going to ask the state to allow us to say whatever it may be. We don't even have to tell them what the exemptions are. I think it would be better by giving them certain exemptions, because then it may be readily more easy to have the state give us that right, the home rule. And then, I mean, once we have that done, you know, really the discussion on how it's going to be implemented, the housing and for housing. And I believe there's many ways of doing it. I mean, right now the discussion is in its infant stage. So, I mean, I would entertain at this point, I would like to postpone it. I mean, I really appreciate everybody coming, because it gives me an idea. And I think maybe Natalie, you can run up a little bit of the things that we've had the discussions on, so we can get sort of some information to deal with that.
That's
March?
Hold on, hold on, March. Is that a motion, Dave, to postpone?
Yeah, after March.
Okay.
I just wanted to offer that my team is happy to work between the clerk's office and real property to try to get you some data on holding periods, because I think that would help. And we will also modify our calculator tool, our exemption tool, to take those into account. And we'll share that back to your finance people in the legislature so that there's time to look at it. Okay.
Well, that may also help with the housing issue in general, because then we have a better handle on how long people are holding houses and all that. We could get that information, but it's not at our fingertips.
We're happy to work on that.
I appreciate that.
And I'll just say, if anybody has the answer to this, please speak up. But along the lines of what Legislator Parody had said, is there somebody out there doing this and doing it the right way? Do we know who that is, or do we know what the other counties are doing throughout the state? How many counties have this transfer tax, and what do they look like? So if we know that answer, sure.
We do know that answer. 5 counties have a transfer tax. Only one of them has exception. That's Columbia County, and they have a $200,000 exemption. So we do... we know what the other counties are doing. Only 5 of them are charging a transfer tax right now. Many more are charging a mortgage recording tax on their own behalf.
Yeah, most of them have a mortgage recording tax, right? How many have a mortgage recording tax, Marge, do you know?
I want to say 20-something, 25 or 26.
Okay.
Yes, Marge, you're correct. And it is, the majority of counties do have some type of mortgage tax locally.
Chair Donaldson, you're going to make that motion now?
Yep. I'll make the motion to
postpone. Second by Leader Ronk. All those in favor?
And it doesn't have to be, we don't have to bring it up at the next meeting. It'll be, sometimes we'll get some more information, and you know, I don't want to tie everybody up. I know you have other things to do than to, listen to me.
What are you, Mr. Nice Guy now?
I believe Chairman Donaldson is required to do it. It has to be on the agenda for the next meeting. I think that's as far as we can.
Right.
So, all right. All those in favor? Anybody opposed? Anything else to discuss?
I move we adjourn.
Leader Ronk. Legislator Haynes, a second. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening.